So we sit five on this case. Council, are you ready to proceed? Then I call Enbridge Company versus Dane County. Please begin.
May it please the court, my name is Eric McLeod, and along with my colleagues Jeffrey Cotterin and Joseph Dietrich of Hush Blackwell, we represent the petitioners Enbridge Energy Company and Enbridge Energy Limited Partnership. Also with us in the hearing room this afternoon is Mary Cohen, in-house counsel for Enbridge. The Dane County Zoning Committee made two decisions in this matter. One is entitled to a presumption of validity and correctness. The other is not. The first concerns the factual determination made by the Zoning Committee that Enbridge carries comprehensive general liability insurance with coverage for sudden and accidental pollution. The second decision was the Zoning Committee's choice to include conditions 7 and 8 in the conditional use permit.
Council, for clarification, are you speaking of then the April 2015 meeting as opposed to the September one that we have in the record?
I'm speaking specifically about the decision that led to the October conditional use permit that was affirmed by the Dane County Board on December 3rd of 2015.
Okay. Just for clarification, may I? Because we have several dates here that we could be focusing on, I think, and I want to know which one you are focusing on. You could arguably be focusing on action taken by the committee in April of 2015. You could be focusing on action taken by the zoning administrator in July of 2015, or you could be focusing on the action taken in September of 2015. Which one are you focusing on?
Well, Your Honor, to be perfectly candid, it is not essential to identify the date of a particular decision. The question ultimately is when the decision became final relative to when Act 55 was enacted. The history, procedural history that Your Honor has outlined succinctly, which is this case began with a permitting decision in April of 2015. Subsequent to that, Enbridge filed an appeal with the county board. What that means is that the permitting process had not yet concluded.
It had not yet concluded. What date are you referring to then?
What date am I referring to in what respect, Your Honor?
Well, I'll tell you what gives rise to my question, and I don't want to break your stride, but I really wanted the clarification. Later on, you'll be arguing, vis-a-vis the words of the statute, a limited interpretation of the word carries. And one of the arguments you're going to be advancing, or have advanced, is that it applies to the date the permit was granted. It's a narrow interpretation. So I want to know which of those multiple dates are you focusing on?
Well, I think for purposes of when was the permit granted, December 3rd of 2015, that is the date on which the permitting process concluded and the imposition of conditions 7 and 8 were effective. The decision...
Thank you. Can continue, but that clarifies it for me. Thank you.
And it was the decision to impose conditions 7 and 8, which was a legal decision, that is the basis for our challenge in this case. Critical to an analysis and an understanding of the issues in this case is the fact that the Zoning Committee, the ZLR, made a determination when it concluded in September 29, 2015, it made a motion. Mary Kolar moved to reinsert conditions 7 and 8 following Act 55. And the language that was used in that motion confirmed that Act 55 rendered conditions 7 and 8 unenforceable. And the factual predicate necessary for that conclusion, that 7 and 8 were unenforceable, was the determination by the ZLR that Enbridge carried comprehensive general liability insurance with coverage for sudden and accidental pollution. That decision, made on September 29th, that led to the ultimate issuance of the CUP in December, is entitled to a presumption of validity and correctness. And that's a decision that no party has specifically challenged in this case. The citizen plaintiffs have certainly made a number of arguments attempting to suggest there was never any showing on the part of Enbridge that it had this particular insurance referenced in the state statute.
Counsel, is it your position that Enbridge need only maintain CGL coverage until the cup is issued?
That's not our position, Your Honor. But there are a number of questions that underlie that more general question, if I may. An issue that's been raised is whether or not the state statute, which is 597025, imposes an affirmative obligation on a pipeline operator to carry a particular type of insurance. It doesn't impose any such requirement. It simply says that if a pipeline operator carries CGL SNA insurance, then a county may not impose a requirement on that pipeline operator to obtain insurance, meaning that's sufficient. If that referenced insurance in the statute is carried, that the county may not impose a condition in a CUP that it carry some other type of insurance.
So what happens if Enbridge carries the CGL coverage on the date that the CUP is approved, and then the next day cancels the insurance? What happens then?
That's an interesting hypothetical, certainly one that doesn't apply here. In Enbridge, there's never been a suggestion to date that Enbridge doesn't carry CGL SNA insurance. But
what I'm trying to get at is there any requirement that it does? So apart from 5969-2BS or 5970, is there any other state-level requirement that Enbridge carry CGL insurance?
There is not at the state level, and the state statutes at issue here do not impose that requirement. That requirement would be one that the county would have to address as part of its permitting process. And let me be specific. What the county could have done in this case is to have said, in connection with its determination that Enbridge does have CGL SNA insurance, to include in the permit an additional requirement that if Enbridge no longer carries that insurance in the future, that it would reopen the permit and it would impose some insurance requirement. That would be a matter within the county's authority, which they could have exercised as part of this permitting process.
And Enbridge would have had no objection to that.
Enbridge would have had no objection to that. And in fact, Enbridge has had no objection to providing proof of insurance that it currently carries. And if asked, would be more than willing to provide the county with a certificate of insurance evidencing what amounts to $1 billion in CGL coverage with SNA liability.
That proof was provided to Dibdahl when he was doing his investigation before the report, correct?
That is correct, Your Honor. And Mr. Dibdahl, who was the county's insurance expert, was pretty clear, we think, in terms of pointing out the fact that the insurance that Enbridge carries is sudden and accidental pollution liability coverage, that's the type of insurance that's referenced in Enbridge's financial statements that it discloses to the public. That's the information that was disclosed to Mr. Dibdahl. And the dispute about whether or not Enbridge carries sudden and accidental pollution liability, what was manufactured in this case after the county had repeatedly conceded, both, again, before the final permitting decision was made, but also during the course of these proceedings, that there had never been a dispute about whether or not Enbridge satisfied that requirement in the statute, and the conditions were unenforceable. The question was raised by the citizen plaintiffs who joined in the case, seeking to enforce these conditions on the premise that the county may not be able to enforce, as the county conceded throughout, but perhaps as citizens, landowners living in the jurisdiction, that they could seek to enforce those particular conditions.
Counsel, before the earlier question, you were indicating, it seemed to me, that the county wasn't contesting the determination or a determination that that Enbridge had the insurance. But on page 24 of their brief, that's exactly what they do, and they say they have done that. They say on page 24 that the county admitted in its answer that it was notified, not that Enbridge had the insurance, although the county may have accepted Mr. Dibdahl's conclusion regarding Enbridge's insurance. It never admitted this factual assertion, and Enbridge never provided proof in the form of actual insurance policies. So it seems to me they are contesting it.
And I apologize, Your Honor. Are you referring to the citizen plaintiff's brief?
No, I'm referring to Dane County's brief, because you said that Dane County had not contested it, and I think they are. That's the way I read page 24 of their brief, footnote 7.
And it may be that the position that the county has made in their brief before this court has been somewhat of an evolution. But let me point out what the county clearly stated in their Court of Appeals brief, in their opening brief in the Court of Appeals. Dane County stated that, quote, it has not disputed that WSSTAT Section 597025 applies to Enbridge's Line 61 and renders the insurance conditions included in CUP 2291 unenforceable, unquote. It's the same position that they took in the circuit court proceedings when there was never any dispute that, in fact, conditions 7 and 8 were unenforceable. And it was in this court that the county has attempted, perhaps, and I mean no disrespect by using this term, but perhaps they have been a bit disingenuous about the nature of the arguments that they have made throughout the course of this proceeding, perhaps capitalizing on the Court of Appeals' erroneous decision and seeking an affirmance of that decision by making what amounts to a significantly different position, if that's in fact the argument that they've made in the brief before this court.
Well, I think Corporation Counsel's letter of July 17 specifically says Enbridge has the required general liability coverage. But the CUP asks for additional insurance.
That's correct, Your Honor. And there's never a dispute until late in the game when arguments in front of this court have been massaged a bit to seek affirmance of the Court of Appeals decision, which simply disregards the very clear concessions and admissions made by the county throughout the course of this proceeding.
Well, arguments evolve. As I recall, at oral argument, Enbridge suggested before the Court of Appeals the county could include a permit condition to the following effect. After a specified period of time, the operator must prove to the county that it carries the requisite insurance. That seems at odds with your argument in your brief that carries means only at the time it was issued, a very narrow construction, and yet I see apparently at oral argument in the Court of Appeals, that's what you took a little different. So I just...
I'd be happy to address that, Your Honor, because I don't think there's any inconsistency about that position at all. The question about the term carries and what the statute requires is very specific. The statute requires that a pipeline operator carry CGL, S&A insurance at the time that the county is making a decision about a permit. That's the relevant point in time. But that doesn't preclude the county from including in that CUP, part of that permitting decision, a requirement that the permit, the pipeline operator, demonstrate in the future that it maintains that insurance. Those are not at odds at all. The county could have included provisions in the CUP to impose that ongoing obligation on Enbridge to demonstrate that it continues to carry. Now, that's never been a dispute in this case in terms of whether or not Enbridge does carry, whether it continues to carry. It carried, the record is very clear about the fact that Enbridge carried CGL S&A insurance throughout the course of the permitting process. There's evidence in the record before the county board on December 3rd of 2015 to confirm that point.
Didn't the board functionally accomplish the same thing that you're suggesting? So you're saying, okay, at the time the CUP issues, if you have the insurance, they can't require anything contrary to that, right, or in addition. However, they could have a provision that says, we want to see that on a regular basis, proof of that insurance. And if you fail to carry that insurance, then here's what you will need to carry. So Enbridge would say that kind of a condition would be okay.
That's correct.
Okay. So I'm wondering if the CUP, the way it stands, didn't essentially accomplish that very thing. So it contains the insurance requirements, but then with the note that says, Act 55 says 7 and 8 are not enforceable, right? So they have no application right now at all because you've shown the CGL coverage. But it would spring into existence if at any point you didn't have the CGL coverage, right? How is that different?
Well, it's different because the state statute renders conditions 7 and 8 void ab initio. The legal
renders
question...
What? Could you say that?
The state statute that is at issue in this case renders conditions 7 and 8 void ab initio. They could not be imposed in the conditional use permit. It's not just a question of whether or not they are unenforceable, but the separate question is whether they could be imposed in the conditional use permit at all. Keep in mind that 5970 sub 25 says that these conditions cannot, that the county cannot require Enbridge to obtain insurance. 5969-2BS says that the county may not impose as a condition in a conditional use permit any requirement that is preempted by state or federal law. The two together render conditions 7 and 8 void ab initio, meaning they are a nullity from the moment that they were imposed, and they should be stricken from the permit. That's the basis for the
Council,
for the remedy
is
that we
the insurance that's carried by Enbridge required by a federal law?
It is not, Your Honor.
Okay. So is there no law that requires Enbridge to carry any insurance at all?
There is no specific law that requires Enbridge as a pipeline operator to carry insurance. Again, the record is quite clear that it does, and it carries the maximum amount of insurance that is available to Enbridge in the insurance market, $1 billion worth of CGL insurance with sudden and accidental
insurance. Does the record show $1 billion? I thought the record showed 700 million CGL.
That's the record. The record has two numbers, Your Honor. One is 700 that was effective as of the beginning of that process, mm-hmm. the permitting process. As of December 3rd, before the county board, evidence was introduced that Enbridge carried approximately $850 million in mm-hmm. CGL coverage.
So where do you get this $1 billion from?
It's not in the record, Your Honor.
We are 20 minutes into this case involving statutory interpretation, and we are going to look at this statute. It is 5970-25, and I'll give you an opportunity to get it before you. Are you ready, Counsel?
I am, Your Honor.
Okay.
Thank you.
So, a county may not require an operator of an interstate hazardous liquid pipeline. There seems to be no issue that Enbridge is an interstate hazardous liquid pipeline operator. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. To obtain insurance. Now, to obtain, so this is a prohibition. This statute, sub 25, is a prohibition. The county may not. So, to obtain. How about can a county require a operator of an interstate hazardous liquid pipeline to maintain, which is different than to obtain?
If by maintain, Your Honor, you mean that it first must obtain and then maintain, then the answer would be no. But in response to prior questions about what the county could require in terms of Enbridge's future insurance coverage.
I kind of want to stay with
okay,
the statute.
Thank you.
So is what's prohibited is to obtain. I don't see any prohibition to of a county requiring an operator to maintain. Am I correct?
I don't see the word maintain in the in the statute, and I don't think the county imposed a requirement that Enbridge maintain any insurance.
And the county, in your interpretation of the statute, would not be prohibited to require an operator to maintain. Is that correct?
I think it would depend, Your Honor, on the language that was used in the conditional use permit and the circumstances or the context in which that requirement was imposed.
Fair enough. I'll continue. To obtain insurance, if the pipeline operating company carries, oh, here we are on the word carries. That has a lot of weight in this case. Your position, as I understand it, is that carries is a date certain and is limited to the time when, in this instance, as you started your oral argument today, would be December 3rd, 2015, the date the permitting process ended.
Your Honor, that's our position based upon the decisions that the county made. If the county had wanted to include other requirements in the conditional use permit that could reopen the question of what insurance Enbridge carries at a future date, it could have imposed those requirements. It could not impose a requirement to obtain insurance as of December 3rd, 2015, because as of that date, the record is clear that Enbridge carried CGL insurance with S&A liability coverage.
Could the From what you've said, though, let's say the record was clear that as of that date there was $750 million. I understand you don't think the statute prohibits the county from saying, okay, on December 3rd, this is what you have. We are going to require that you maintain coverage in that amount. Is there any prohibition about that?
Again, I think it would depend upon the language that the county would use to require some future action on the part of Enbridge.
Let's stay with the word carries then. Although your interpretation of carries is specific to a date, whatever the date may be here, it's December 3rd, I think you acknowledge in your reply brief that not to continue to carry or insurance would be an absurd result. Isn't that right? I'm looking at page 2 of your reply brief, footnote 1, which says, as a practical matter, it would make absolutely no sense, which I interpret as absurd result. As a practical matter, it would make absolutely no sense for Enbridge to operate without adequate insurance.
Yes, that's the position we've taken in this case, and I'm sure we stated as much in the briefs
so
that we filed.
So it seems to me that the argument of your opposing counsel is carries is broader. It isn't just the moment in time, that day or that hour, but rather carries, and they go through with, you know, all sorts of definitions for us, but suffice it to say that it's more expansive than your definition, and they say, and the Court of Appeals says, if you do it just in that moment in time, that renders an absurd result.
Your Honor, with all due respect, I think the absurd result is a function of the county's failure to express any concern about whether or not Enbridge carries insurance in the future. That was never a concern raised by any party or as part of the record in this case to suggest we'd better do something, the county, we'd better do something to make sure we can deal with an eventuality in the future when Enbridge fails to continue to carry this insurance. Had they been concerned about it and had they addressed that in the CUP, we'd be talking about different language, not language that we would be opposed to, but I don't think we disagree when it comes to the question of how we define the word carries, but the question is, in what context is the county giving effect to that term in this conditional use permit, which is issued one time. It has one time to issue the CUP. It chooses the language that it believes is important to be included in that conditional use permit.
So let's say we agree with you. The 5970 precludes conditions 7 and 8. They certainly, the board certainly appeared to think that insurance was an important factor. So what if the remedy was to strike 7 and 8, but send it back to the board for consideration of adding a term as you had discussed would be acceptable to Enbridge?
I don't think there's authority for that result in this case. I think the only issue that's been raised as part of the certiorari challenge in this case is whether or not conditions 7 and 8 are valid and whether they should be stricken from the conditional use permit. And what would be done in that instance is, in fact, usurpation of the county's authority to make determinations about what it wants to include in its conditional use permit. And that the notion that Enbridge should be subject to another permitting process or to reform the permit in the way that Your Honor suggests, I think is entirely inconsistent with the nature of this type of proceeding, which is Enbridge was issued a conditional use permit. It only challenged the validity of two conditions, which everybody during the permitting process conceded were invalid and unenforceable. It challenges the imposition of those conditions, and then the result is we get sent back for further consideration by the ZLR about additional conditions they may choose to add on top of that. Enbridge is not adverse at all. I'm sorry.
Your red light is on. You will have 5 minutes in rebuttal. Your red light is on. It's been on for a while.
I apologize, Your Honor.
Yes, thank you. Now, you have broken up the responsive time to 15 minutes to begin with by Attorney Galt and 15 minutes by Attorney Hamill. Have you divided the issues between you so we should try to limit and focus our questions, or are you both going to talk about whatever you choose to talk about?
Your Honor, we've conferred, and the county's primary position will be arguing the remand issue, and I believe Ms. Hamill will be addressing some of the other issues.
Okay, so you're going to focus mostly on the remand that we just started in just now.
Yes, Your Honor.
Very good. Thank you for that help, and please begin when you are ready to go.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. My name is David Galt. I'm with the Dane County Corporation Council Office, and I represent all of the various Dane County respondents in this case.
Counsel, make sure you speak up, if you would.
Yes, Your Honor. I will. Your Honors, this case does have statewide significance. From the county standpoint, this has statewide significance to every unit of local government that has permitting authority under the Wisconsin statutes. And the significance of that is, what is the appropriate remedy when a court on certiorari review determines that conditions that may have been imposed in a permit are impermissible or unlawful? And it's the county's position in this case that the clear and appropriate remedy for the circuit court should have been to remand this matter back to the Dane County Zoning Committee, the ZLR, for a consideration of whether the conditional use permit could be granted under the six standards outlined in our ordinances without the insurance conditions. And the reason I think that's appropriate, and I think the most apposite case that we can look to, is the Lamar Central Outdoor, Inc. case. Because that case says two things. It says that the ZLR equivalent at a city, a local zoning authority, is the most appropriate body to make those kind of findings of fact. And in that case, this court said that the matter should be remanded back to that zoning body because the law had changed. And in that instance, as you recall, the law of variances changed several times over a matter of a few years. And this court said that it should be remanded back to the city's zoning authority because they hadn't considered the case under what the law was at the time. The law had changed.
Well, counsel, didn't you write an opinion to the county saying that the two provisions are not? I'm sure you did, because I have a copy in my notebook that say they're not enforceable. So why didn't they have that information? They did, certainly. Your letter is July 17th, and the permit was issued after that, and you gave them your legal opinion. So I don't know why they didn't consider it when they issued the permit?
Well, Your Honor, certainly I did say that, and obviously the county is a creature of the legislature, and we're bound by state statute. Where I would differ with what Your Honor just said was, is our position is the CUP was only issued one time, and that was on April 15th, 2015, when findings of fact were made as to whether the six standards could be made under our ordinance, and the decision was made based on Mr. Dibdahl's recommendations that the two insurance conditions be imposed. The statute wasn't adopted until 3 months later, in the summer, when the budget bill was adopted. So there was a distinct change in law after the zoning committee fully considered and made findings of fact in this case.
But the zoning administrator took out the two conditions, okay? And then it was concluded by the powers that oversee what he does that he didn't have that authority, and the county board put, and the zoning committee, I think you call it, what do you call it?
ZLR,
the Zoning Land Regulation Committee. Got it. Okay. So they put it back in after that time, which was considerably after your letter.
It was, Your Honor, but I think if you look at the minutes and the findings from that meeting in September 2015, they did not reconsider the permit or reissue it. They simply reinstituted the status quo. They said, we're the only body that can issue this permit, and those conditions that we issued in April should still be in there. They didn't go back and revisit the whole issue of insurance or whether or not they did put a footnote in that, but they were unenforceable.
But, you know, what import should I give to a county agency that knowingly, with advice of counsel, violates a state statute? How should that affect me? I mean, if we had every county in Wisconsin doing whatever they wanted when they don't like a state statute, where in the world would we be? Now, maybe I should give no import to that concern, but I'd like your opinion on it.
Well, Your Honor, I guess I would disagree with – I don't think it was the intent of the Zoning Committee to violate the statute.
They were told that the provisions they were putting in there were not lawful.
They were unenforceable. They were lawful when they were imposed. They subsequently became unenforceable. I disagree with Enbridge's position that they try to bootstrap the 5969 sub 2 BS statute into this, but that says that you can't impose conditions that are preempted by state law. Those conditions weren't preempted when the insurance conditions were put on the permit in April 2015.
They were preempted when the permit that is before us was issued and on which we are litigating. You know, you say in your letter, Section 59.7025 expressly prohibits a county from requiring a pipeline operator to obtain insurance if they have the required coverage. And earlier you say they have the required coverage. So my concern is, you know, how do I look at the arguments of Dane County if they knowingly violated a state law, and clearly there's no contest that they're not subject to the state law.
No, absolutely no question that they're subject to the state law, Your Honor. And
right.
I was going to make that clear up front. But, Your Honor, the intent of the September action by the Zoning Committee was simply to correct the action of the zoning administrator that was ultra vires back in July, which was to change the permit without authority. I think the minutes in their motion are clear that there was not a reconsideration of the entire permit to determine whether or not they could there was not a reissuance of the permit. It actually stated that the effective date of the permit was still back in April of 2015. So I guess I view differently what their intent, and their intent wasn't to violate the law. Their intent was they simply wanted to maintain the status quo.
Well, okay. I think you and I are just talking past each other, but I understand your position.
So, Council, the COP went up on appeal, and at one point, before or after the appeal was filed, was Act 55 adopted?
There was an original – you're talking about the appeal to the county board, Your Honor?
Correct.
That was filed, I believe, in May of 2015, and then there was a subsequent appeal filed by Enbridge in the fall as well. It went before the county board in December of 2015.
And before the final disposition of the appeal, Act 55 had become law, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. And so would it have been within the board's authority to look at the CUP with the insurance provisions, the note that the insurance provisions were not enforceable, was it within Dane County's authority to say, hey, you know what, we looked at the state law and it precludes these conditions. We're sending it back to redo it. Would that have been within its authority?
I would say, Your Honor, not practically, and if I can, I'll explain why.
But hang on a second. I just want to know first legally. Would it have been
legally, they could have taken that action, yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So, but they didn't.
They did not.
All right. So when you say at page 40 of your brief, a cursory review of the record establishes that ZLR never considered issuing the permit without the insurance conditions. Indeed, the majority of the deliberations was regarding insurance. So to the extent that ZLR did not do that, that's because the county board did not tell them to, right?
Well, the ZLR's action that references is in April 2015 before it ever went to the county board.
Correct. So, but the county board, having the benefit of Act 55, could have looked at that and said, well, this knocks out the insurance provisions, so we're going to send this back to ZLR to consider without the insurance provisions, right? And it didn't do that.
Did not, Your Honor.
Right. So the reason that ZLR did not consider issuance of the CUP without the insurance is because of what the county board failed to do.
It was never remanded back to them.
Correct. All right. So now why should we be terribly concerned about the ZLR's ability to consider issuance of the COP without the insurance provisions if the county board has already foregone that option?
Thank you for that question, Your Honor. If you look at the procedure before the county board, it's very clear that the procedure that was in place in 2015 was not de novo and did not provide for a meaningful review of the issuance of the CUP. And I think important, and this was not cited in my brief, but the Oster-Hughes versus Board of Adjustment for Washburn County, it's at 282 West 2nd, 228, and I'm quoting from paragraph 26, the scope and nature of an administrative appeal or review must be determined by the provisions of the statutes or ordinances which authorize them. I think if you look at the ordinance which we had in effect at the time for an appeal to the county board, which, by the way, has been rescinded and replaced, we now have an appeal to the Board of Adjustment, stated that the action of the zoning committee shall be deemed just and equitable unless the county board by a 3/4 vote of supervisors present and voting reverses or modifies the action appealed from. So this procedure was an appeal to all 37 members of the county board. Each side was limited to 30 minutes to present their case, even though it took 6 months before the ZLR. There were legislative type debates. There was a presumption of correctness, and it took a 3/4 majority to overrule the ZLR's decision, and the county board made no findings. So I'm in a unique position here of criticizing the procedure that we had in effect at that time in 2015 for our CUP review to the county board. But in effect, if you look at it, there really was no meaningful review, and the only body that has ever reviewed all the evidence and made findings of fact on this is the ZLR in April of 2015.
So what you're what it sounds to me like, at least, is that you're asking us to do something the county board couldn't do for itself. Is that right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
But why should we do that?
Because, Your Honor, we had, in all honesty, we had a faulty procedure that did not provide for a meaningful review.
Well, it took was a vote, wasn't it?
It took a 3/4 vote with a presumption that the underlying decision was correct.
But that's, you know, we allow, you know, local municipalities to develop their own procedures on how they want to review, right? You set the bar really high, and you set a really deferential standard of review. That's your business to do. We're not going to fix that for you, are we?
I think you have authority when the record clearly indicates that there was not a meaningful review to step in and say that the appropriate remedy still would have been to send it back to ZLR, because they're the only body who has ever considered all the facts, and they're the body who is prescribed by ordinance to make those findings.
Could some party during that county board appeal have stood up and said, hey, wait a minute, you know, with this Act 55 and knocking out conditions 7 and 8, this really needs to go back to the ZLR for consideration on whether the CUP should be issued ab initio, right? Somebody could have said that.
Yes, sir.
Nobody did.
No, Your Honor. Your Honor, in conclusion, our position is there was one CUP, and that was in April. There were specific findings made, but the primary factor here is the law change after those findings were made. And as set forth in our brief, I think the clear, well-established common law, not there are no Wisconsin cases on point, but the well-established common law is when conditions are integral to the issuance of the permit, and I think you'd be challenged to find a situation where conditions weren't more integral to the issuance of a permit when they spent the entire 6 months talking about risk mitigation and insurance. When those conditions are integral to the issuance of the permit, the appropriate remedy is not to strike those conditions out of the permit and let the rest of the permit stand, because in essence what is happening then is the court is rewriting the permit. And the appropriate remedy for the circuit court in this case was to send it back to the ZLR and let them make a determination as to whether the six standards can be met. I would point out also that...
Before you do,
yes, sir.
You say that the ZLR should have been allowed to consider issuance of the CUP without the conditions. But essentially that's what's already occurred, right? The CUP has the conditions in it, but has a note that says they're not enforceable, and yet it issued it. Right? Isn't that issuance of the CUP without the insurance requirements?
But I think if they considered the entire case in light of the adoption of Act 55, there are perhaps other conditions they could impose that would provide some insurance of financial responsibility. For instance, some type of an annual recertification that Enbridge actually has the insurance to trigger the statute.
Yeah, hang on a second, though. I just want to make sure I'm not missing the procedural status here. Are you telling me now that at the end of the process, Dane County looked at the CUP and said, wow, we should not have issued the CUP, right? And therefore, I don't know, should you have filed a petition for review of your own CUP?
I'm not sure which point in time you're referring to, Your Honor.
Well, whenever the CUP issued, right? You get through the end of the appellate process, right? It gets appealed up through the county board, and the county board's all done, and the result of the county board's action is that the CUP issued, right? So was it Dane County's position at that point, this CUP never should have issued?
No.
Okay, so if it's not the county's position that should not have issued, then what it allowed to be issued was a CUP that had no insurance requirements that were operable as a part of it, right?
Well, now I think you're referring to the September action by the zoning ZLR, and again, all they intended to do at that time was to maintain the status quo of what they did in April.
I'm just referring to the end result of the appellate process in Dane County, right?
The end result of the appellate process was the CUP as issued by ZLR with a notation that 7 and 8 were unenforceable.
Right. So at that point, Dane County had issued a CUP that had no enforceable insurance requirements, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. My name is Patricia Hamill. I represent seven landowners who live on or within a mile of Enbridge's Line 61 pipeline. Several of them are present here today, Keith and Tricia Riopel and Mr. Campbell. Yes. And they stand to lose the most when Enbridge's tar sands pipeline leaks. All the Dane County Zoning Committee tried to do was protect them and make sure that Enbridge had adequate insurance to protect their homes, their families, and their property in the case of a pipeline spill. They didn't want the county to be on the hook for paying for emergency response, cleanup, and damage to natural resources, which are not covered by Enbridge's insurance. expert. Otherwise, our clients face an unacceptable risk of damage like that suffered by Michigan residents after Enbridge's record-breaking 2010 pipeline spill. Our clients went to court in 2016 to enforce the insurance conditions to protect their property. They want market-based insurance.
When you went to court, did you go to court to enforce provisions 7 and 8 in the CUP?
Yes, we did, Your Honor.
What kind of claim for relief is there that you can articulate for me that gives anyone the right to enforce provisions that are contrary to a statute?
We don't believe those provisions are contrary to the statute.
Okay, so you think that the statutes that were enacted by the legislature don't affect those two provisions?
That's right, Your Honor, because there's a condition in the statute that requires that the hazardous liquid pipeline operator carry comprehensive general liability insurance that includes coverage for sudden and accidental pollution.
Right, but did you read the Dibdahl report where he said that they have that? And in fact, he called it, I think, a time limit or something, but then defined it that it was the same thing.
He did not say that it was the same thing. He's here today. But
okay, well, that's fine. I have his report, and I read it a couple times. I'll read it again before the decision gets written.
I had to read it a few times because there's a lot of terms of insurance lingo in there that I'm not totally familiar with, but I think the conclusion is that Enbridge has never shown anyone their insurance policies.
That's different than showing proof of insurance. So you recognize that, don't you?
I do, but their insurance expired May 1st, 2015. The insurance that the coverage summary that they showed David Dibdahl was no longer the insurance that they had May 1st, July 1st, December 1st, or at any subsequent time. And one of the conditions that the county placed in its conditional use permit, condition 8, simply says that Enbridge has to carry insurance that has an AM Best rating of a particular amount.
You know, as I read item 7 of the CUP, it says that general liability insurance with a time element exception to the pollution exclusion parent currently in place. So 7 acknowledges that Enbridge has the insurance, and then it goes on to add some other kinds of insurance, right? So condition 7 says that they have it. Now,
there's
I'm
no
a little
basis
confused.
For that conclusion.
Well, I don't know. We have what the ZLR did, and that's what your colleague there is arguing was absolutely appropriate for their process, and it should go back. But right in the whole thing, it says that insurance currently in place, and that's the decision of the ZLR.
Currently in April of 2015, and subsequently, these statutes were enacted in July, and they didn't have the same insurance in July that they had
okay.
in April.
I hear what you're saying, and I'm not arguing with you, and I don't think opposing counsel for Enbridge would argue that. Certainly, Dane County could have required an ongoing proof of insurance. When I had a mortgage on my house, I had to give proof of the insurance. I don't think that that's an unusual thing. They never asked to see my policy, but they wanted a statement from the insurer that I had enough insurance to cover the amount of money that the bank lent me. I don't think that's unusual. I think what opposing counsel is saying is that was never required in the CUP.
But it was. That is Condition 8. That Enbridge has to produce proof of insurance on demand. And Enbridge asked the circuit court to strike Provision 8.
Well, counsel, Condition 8 says the required general liability insurance and environmental impairment liability insurances shall meet the technical insurance specifications listed in Appendix A, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So is the obligation to periodically provide proof of insurance a technical insurance specification?
It is part of Appendix 8.
I know, but Condition 8 only incorporated the technical insurance specifications that were in Appendix A.
Well, that's the AM Best rating.
Right.
It's not exclusive to technical requirements.
Well, that's what it says. I'm just going with the language of the CUP, and it says, shall meet the technical insurance specifications listed in Appendix A. So the The actual language of the CUP says if you want to know what the technical insurance specifications are you have to meet, you go look in Appendix A. But it doesn't say anything about periodic proof of insurance in Condition A.
Appendix A does require proof on demand.
I don't think I'm making I don't think I'm making my question clear. So I'm trying to figure out, because, and I will tell you this, Condition 8 only incorporated the technical insurance specifications that were in Appendix A. So what I want to know is whether your position is that periodic proof of insurance is a technical insurance specification.
There's no way to determine whether any technical specification has been met without proof. How can the county know what insurance Enbridge has without seeing their insurance policies?
Well, I know, but that's a separate question. Condition 8 is saying what you have to satisfy. The question of proof is a separate question from what you have to satisfy. And that's not a – is the question of proof, is that a technical insurance specification?
No, but I don't see how you can demonstrate compliance with the statute, the requirement of the comprehensive general liability insurance, that the sudden and accidental coverage is there,
yeah,
that it's got 700,000 or
so let me give you this. I don't know how you prove that either without the proof of insurance. But I'm just looking for something in the COP that says, you know, here is the requirement to prove it. And I don't find that.
That is Condition 8, I believe.
Why aren't you arguing that Appendix A includes the evidence of insurance provision?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand your
question. Why aren't you arguing that Appendix A includes the last part that says evidence of insurance?
I think
upon request of the county,
it does require that, and I think that's why Condition 8 should not have been stricken. There was nothing in the statute that prohibits a county from requiring proof of insurance, that prohibits a county from requiring continuing insurance, or various other kinds of insurance, as long as they're not required to, as long as they can show that they have comprehensive general liability insurance, something Enbridge never claimed that it had until the brief that it filed in this court. It consistently said they had commercial general liability insurance in their certiorari petition, in the initial brief in support of their certiorari petition, and before the county board. They said they had commercial general liability insurance. Now, I'm told that's not the same thing, but we have no evidence, and they've never claimed until the brief that they filed in this court in last fall that they had comprehensive general liability insurance. And we still don't know if they have coverage for sudden and accidental pollution liability because nobody has seen their policy.
Counsel, I want to pick up on the word sudden and accidental. And why do I want to pick up that? Because it's in the statute, and I want to get back to the words of the statute. The statute, that is sub 25 of 5970, says that the insurance... A county may not require an operator of a hazardous liquid pipeline to obtain insurance if the pipeline operating company carries, and we already talked a little bit about what carries mean, comprehensive general liability insurance coverage that includes coverage for sudden and accidental pollution liability. I understand your argument is that this policy does not have sudden and accidental coverage. And I understand, but push back on me, I may be misunderstanding. And I understand the argument is this, that the CGL policy has a time limit to it. And that is the CGL policy, at least the one that was previously discussed. I don't know about the one that your opposing counsel is talking about that was displayed, he asserts, in December of 2015. But the one that was the subject of the expert's report said it had a time limit. And the time, so you have the policy. It has a pollution exclusion. And then it has an exception to the exclusion. And the exception has the time limit. And the time limit says, in essence, it has to be discovered, the pollutant has to be discovered within 30 days, and then there's a 90-day time limit for reporting it to your insurer. And I understood your argument to be, and the testimony, before the commission in April of the expert witness that explained this, according to the transcript, that really there is no a sudden and accidental insurance, because unless it falls within the 30 to 90 day period, it doesn't exist. Am I getting your argument correctly or not?
You are getting it correctly, and again, we're basing this on a report from some policies that the consultant didn't see, but he found that what they had was time-limited insurance. It was not sudden and accidental pollution liability coverage, and the Supreme Court decision in the Just V land reclamation case defines sudden and accidental to be not just temporally limited, so that further indicates that what they have is not sudden and accidental pollution liability coverage, but of course we don't know what they really have because we've never seen it.
Would you comment on your opposing counsel saying the operative date and the record reflects reference to $750 million in December? See, in reading the Court of Appeals opinion that and the arguments, I didn't really see the December date as being the operative date here until right now. I may have missed it, but I...
Yeah, Enbridge's theory is that the permit wasn't final until December.
Yeah,
however, we maintain, and the zoning administrator admitted, he had no right to take any conditions out. We disagree with the Corporation Council's interpretation of the statute. We don't think it was analyzed correctly, and it is actually not preempted. But the only evidence, if you could call it that David Dibdahl had was what they had in April of 2015. Nobody subsequently ever got any kind of summary or disclosure. It's surprising to me that Enbridge is claiming that they'll show us the policies anytime, because they could have done that at some point during the last 3 years, and maybe we wouldn't be here.
Counsel, what is the evidentiary standard that Enbridge was required to meet?
They had to show that they had comprehensive general liability insurance with coverage for sudden and accidental pollution liability, and that's a continuing obligation.
Right, but I'm looking for the evidentiary standard. So you're saying you're not satisfied because you've never seen the policies, right?
No one has seen their policies.
Okay. But proof of insurance is quite frequently, in the commercial context, established by certificates of insurance, isn't that right?
I can't speak to that from personal knowledge, but Mr. Dibdahl, I think, could tell you that just from looking at the first page of the certificate, he could tell you whether they had comprehensive general liability insurance. And he's of the opinion that it basically no longer exists.
Okay, but we're talking about the time when this was at issue, right, in issuance of the CUP.
Yes, and he didn't see their certificates. He only saw a summary of coverage that would expire in less than a month.
Okay. So would it be, if one was able to tell from secondary sources like certificates of insurance whether the required insurance existed, would that be sufficient, theoretically
speaking? Well, I think we need to remand this to the zoning committee so they can get evidence. And they can do that in such a way that their trade secrets aren't compromised.
Hang on. I'm looking for a standard that we can apply, right? So if we remand, it is not going to be, remand and do whatever you want. We have to figure out what is your concern with respect to the evidentiary standard. Is it a requirement to show policies? Is it acceptable to show certificates of insurance if that discloses the required type of insurance? Is there anything that governs this as a ordinance, as a statute, or anything else?
Well, they would have to show at least as much that would satisfy the reviewer as to what the insurance covers, whether it's sudden and accidental coverage, whether it's comprehensive coverage, whatever is required. That shouldn't require disclosure of the entire policy. It's just the pollution exclusions that we're really concerned with here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd like to address just a couple of items that were raised by opposing counsel, and I'll take the last issue that was the subject of discussion first, and that is, what is the evidentiary standard and what's in the record that satisfies that evidentiary standard that allows the zoning committee to reach the conclusion that Enbridge has CGL insurance with SNA pollution liability. And it's the sufficiency of the evidence standard. It's described in the certiorari context as substantial evidence, but the case law makes it clear that the standard is what a reasonable decision maker would deem appropriate to make the factual determination at issue. It's a sufficiency of the evidence standard, the same that would apply in a jury determination. And that finding is entitled to a presumption of validity that must be overcome by clear and convincing evidence to the contrary, or some basis to show that, in fact, that determination was not founded. But let me address the things that we know that are in the record that support that factual determination. And I'll start with Mr. Dibdahl's own report, in which he has confirmed that he has reviewed the certificate of insurance that Enbridge provided to him. He stated in his report that the information provided by Enbridge to him he deemed credible and helpful in reaching his conclusions. He stated at page 15 of his report, and that's at record 8212, quote, the terminology sudden and accidental pollution liability is still used to describe the remnant liability insurance created by the time exception to the pollution exclusion and the general liability insurance policies commonly purchased by oil and gas companies.
Unquote. Counsel, is Enbridge a publicly traded company?
I do not believe so, Your Honor, and I apologize if I misstated that. Mr. Dibdahl also states that sudden and accidental pollution liability is what Enbridge shows for today. That's at page 12 of Mr. Dibdahl's report. There is other evidence, both at the beginning of this process back in January of 2015, in which Enbridge represents to the county, quote, Enbridge carries general liability insurance, which includes sudden and accidental pollution liability. That's at record 8 at page 285. At the December hearing before the county board, Enbridge's counsel pointed out to the county board, quote, Enbridge has $700 million worth of general liability insurance, which includes sudden and accidental pollution coverage. That, by the way, has been raised to $860 million. That's at record 32, rather, it's record 9, page 317. The evidence that Enbridge carries sudden and accidental pollution liability coverage is abundant. As far as what requirement is there in the conditional use permit to provide proof of insurance, and Justice Ziegler pointed out the provision in Appendix A that talks about evidence of insurance, and it says, upon request by Dane County, Enbridge shall furnish a certificate of insurance to the county which accurately reflects that the procured insurances fulfill these insurance requirements. It's a specific requirement which we believe is ineffective because these insurance requirements are invalid and unenforceable and should be stricken from the conditional use permit. This is not a requirement that Enbridge provide some general disclosure about insurance, CGL, SNA insurance that it maintains in the future. But Enbridge has never been asked, and Enbridge has not indicated that it wouldn't be willing to be forthcoming and disclose to the county what insurance it has. These are separate issues.
So if the CUP had a requirement that Enbridge periodically provide proof of insurance, that's a condition to which Enbridge would not object?
We would not, Your Honor, and it's because it doesn't require or impose an obligation to obtain insurance. If the county had been concerned about ensuring that Enbridge maintained that insurance in the future, it could have included provisions in the CUP that addressed that. It didn't. And I can only imagine, and the court should only presume that it didn't, because it wasn't concerned that Enbridge wouldn't continue to carry the particular insurance that it continued to carry.
Counsel, would you go ahead?
Thank you. Would you object if the condition was that Enbridge shall maintain liability insurance coverage in the amount of $750 million limits in general liability insurance with a time element exception to the pollution exclusion currently in place?
I think that requirement would be inconsistent with the state statutes that are...
Well, the state statute talks about obtain. Right now, Condition 7 says Enbridge shall procure, which I think is tantamount to obtain, O-B-T-A-I-N, but this condition says procure and maintain. The statute doesn't prohibit maintenance. The statute prohibits the requirement of obtaining. So my question is, would you object if Condition 7 just said that Enbridge shall maintain liability and that the amount would be in the current amount of $750 million? Is there anything objectionable under the statute?
I apologize. I see that my red light is on. I don't want to...
You can answer, Justice Breyer.
And thank you, Your Honor. And I think the answer to that is, would we object? It is in direct conflict with the state statute, which, and there's a distinction to be drawn here, and that is the difference between requiring a pipeline operator to obtain or maintain insurance and a situation in which they
it doesn't
maintain that insurance, and what can the county do as a result? And that's a critical distinction that the county failed to consider. And what it may be seeking, and what your question may be addressing here, is should the CUP now be reformed to reflect such a requirement? That was for the county to have determined at the time it issued the CUP.
I'm saying what the statute prohibits, and it speaks for itself.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. This is really quite an interesting case, and the briefing was excellent, and so were the arguments today. So it helps the court a lot when the lawyers are really into the case. We are going to adjourn now, and the court will meet in closed conference at 3:10. We are adjourned.